Today on the AV Podcast, I invite O'Neal Kamaka to discuss our very early NBA season review. We discuss our surprises of the season so far, as well as our early MVP candidates, Kyrie Irving proving that he's not a Robin, and we also break down O'Neal's summer coaching Canadian phenom RJ Barrett, the legendary Eastern Commerce versus Oakwood rivalry in Toronto, and a whole lot more. To listen to more podcasts, make sure you subscribe right here to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. And once again, South Shore Ave is now available wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can catch the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name South Shore Ave. So go ahead and check us out. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. Here we go.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast. My next guest is a high school basketball legend in the city of Toronto, courtesy of Oakwood Collegiate. And he's also an alumnus at St. Mary's College, who played overseas, and now has been a basketball coach for close to 20 years now. Currently the assistant head coach for Oakwood Collegiate. Wait, didn't they tear that school down? That shit's still alive?
Oh, hell no. They turned that down. I'm gonna lay right in front of that school when they try to do that. They turned nothing down. It's gonna be there forever, ever.
God, that's just, I thought that was factual. I almost pumped my fist when I read that in this. Fuck. Okay. All right.
No, open forever, baby. Open forever.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the pod, please welcome O'Neal Kamaka to the AV. What's good, sir?
How you doing, buddy?
It's good. What's good?
How you doing, Calvin? You all right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. I'm very good. Nah, for real. I figured, yes, I'm a little bitter that they tore down Eastern, you know, and not Oakwood, you know. But, you know, the thing is, I figured if they tore my school down, they would just tear down all the other schools that we dominated. So I guess I was wrong.
No. First of all, you guys didn't dominate us. And second of all, Eastern Commerce was a drop-in center. It wasn't a school. So let's get that straight.
Hey, stop
guys,
that.
Guys just showed up, went to class, and that was about it. It was a drop-in center.
Stop that. Stop that right now. Stop that. We had scholars. We had scholars at that school. Scholars.
No. I think you and Colin Charles are the only scholars. Yeah, okay, maybe by now. Maybe by now, Messiah. That's about it. No, I'm joking. You know, it's all love. I was at the, actually went by the, when they did a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting because Greg Francis was there as well. And yeah. Actually, Gerty Rant was there.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like three Oakwood guys there, but it was about Eastern.
Right.
I always have love for Eastern. I miss the school. I miss the rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I coach, coaching at Oakwood, all I say is just, you know, during practice when I'm yelling at guys, it's what is Eastern Commons doing right now? You know, that's my motivation to get our guys ready. It's like, we got to get ready for Eastern. So, as much, you know, the rivalry, you know, this rivalry goes back, it went back so far. So, you know, I miss Eastern Commerce, you know. And even when I was playing, I would call, you know, we would call each other on the phone, going back and forth, talking-ish.
Talking trash, yeah.
You know, yeah, so it was fun. It was fun. It was a great rivalry. I'm really going to miss that school. And I, you know what, honestly, what I love about what Colin Charles said was, you know, Eastern had people that cared. They had adults in the building that actually cared about the kids.
Yeah, that's true.
We never had that at Oakwood. We never had that at Oakwood. It was just business. We just showed up. You know, I don't think I ever said more than two words to our head coach, Thompson, the whole 5 years I was there. And so, no, seriously, you know, other than he called me in his office telling me, let Greg Francis take more shots. So he's like, okay, that was it. But, you know, like even Simeon Mars was inviting me down during this off season to work out with guys. You know, and I just thought that was great. And that's, you know, guys like Simeon Mars, you know, those are the kind of coaches I wanted to play for as I was going through my basketball career. So,
yeah.
Yeah, Eastern, definitely going to miss the rivalry and the school.
And you know what? For me, like I just missed Simeon. Like when, the time I got there, I think that was his. That's when he went to Kentucky with Jamal. So I just missed him.
Yeah.
But I mean, I heard so many great things, and I've known him because of my older brothers and stuff. I got a chance to know him since I was like, you know, like a preteen and stuff. So I got a chance to know him, and I heard all the great stories and such. But yeah, Eastern, you're smack on point with that. That was they did really care, like, you know. And shout out to Miss Khan if she's listening to this, because that was our guidance counselor that made sure our books were straight. You know, she made sure, you know, we were, you know, everybody was making grades and, you know, like trying to get the best grades as possible and, you know, preparing us for the ACT, SAT tests and, you know, and studying with us over and over again to make sure that we got it. And I'll always, you know, have respect for her for that. You know what I mean? Like that was like, she was like our mom on the, like on Listen, that team.
She knows, like to this day, I see her and she always comes up to me and talks to me and gives me a hug, you know, because she's like, you know, you always terrorize Eastern. I'm like, yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And but I like the fact that she remembered me, and but she's still around, and I just think it's amazing. Like people like Miss Khan, and you know, Simeon. Like my, I just light up when I see Simeon Mars. Like you know, Simeon's like Pokeroo. Like he, you know, he's quiet, he's reserved, but he just once in a while he'll stick his head out when there's a function going on, and whenever I see him, I get really happy to see him because he's, you know, he's a basketball legend and he's just a great person. And he always wanted the best for just kids. He didn't have to be an Eastern kid. It's just if you're a kid growing up and you're playing basketball, Simeon was always looking out for you. So
he had your back.
You know, other than that, I think just having Simeon, that's where you guys had the advantage. But other than that, Oakwood was better than Eastern.
I mean,
we'll just leave it at that.
But you know, I won't leave it at that. What I'll say? But you know what? But shout out to the Eastern and Oakwood rivalry, because even in my day, that was, because I remember my last year, Eastern wasn't as, I mean, not Eastern, but sorry, Oakwood wasn't as good, but it was still one of those, like, it was just the games always still went down to the wire for whatever reason. It's like it's like, you know, when it's a division rival, it doesn't matter what if the team sucks or not. It's always going to be a close game. That's what it was. Because in my time, we had you guys had Dean Walker, and he was nice, man. That's an underrated guy.
Oh, yeah.
That guy was tough, man. That guy was a tough player.
Solid assassin.
Yeah, definitely for sure. Never said much, but, man, whew, he can ball, man. He was nice. Yeah.
He was tough. When I left Oakwood, I think Dean was, like, in grade 10, maybe grade 11, and he was, like, 5'8", 5'9".
And then he shot up.
And the guy shot up to, like, 6'6". I'm like, what? Yeah. I was drinking his porridge and eating his chicken for soup. I'm like, what? I heard Dean Walker get a scholarship. I'm like, Dean Walker, how fast is he, buddy? Does he have a 50-inch vertical at 5'8"? They're like, nah, he's like 6'6".
Yeah, he grew.
I see Dean Walker 6'6", he's like 225. I'm like, what the heck?
The hell happened?
And, yeah, man.
And
yeah,
he had the game to match. He had the game to match.
Oh, yeah.
But I agree. I missed that rivalry. I didn't go to Eastern for all 5 years. Like, like, you know, some of my teammates and stuff, but like that's something I missed too. That was always a great rivalry for sure.
Yeah, it was a great rivalry.
Yeah, man, no question. We'll get into your situation over there at Oakwood in a little bit. Just to move forward just a little bit. This is the very early review of the NBA season so far, but I just wanted to get into some basketball talk. The NCAA is about to start up, you know, very soon as well. LiAngelo Ball is already getting a head start on trying to lead the nation in steals. There's so much to talk about. And for the Toronto listeners, yes, we'll get into some Raptors talk in a minute. But and we'll also decide if it's even worth discussing the Cleveland Cavaliers. I just find it such an over-discussed conversation. So before I even get into some of the surprise of the NBA season, help me out here. Just as a basketball fan, I'll ask all you Canadian basketball fans out there, where can I go to watch NBA highlights on my TV? Like, does that only exist on the internet? Seriously, like, help me out here.
It does, and, you know, you probably have to get a special, like, do you have NBA TV? Because you got to do it on NBA TV.
No,
I
do.
Sometimes in my short. But you know what? Actually, because I have, you know, I have Bell 5, so I got, like, TSN 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, come on, man. You know what? This ain't the United States, eh? It's not, you don't get ES, like, when I was in school in the States, and anytime I go down to the States, there's only one channel I have it on, and that's ESPN, right? Because now, I mean, they do have some more specialty packages or specialty sports channels, but
right.
I just love ESPN, because you always, you see, you see all that. You'll see hockey highlights. You'll see football highlights. You'll see basketball highlights, right? And especially whatever sports in season. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. You always see hockey here in Canada. You know what I mean? I never forget the Pan Am games when they showed Ottawa versus the Toronto Maple Leafs game 4 years prior, when they should have been showing when Canada was playing in the gold medal game against Venezuela.
I can't believe that. Yeah.
They're showing a game 4 years ago, and we're playing in a gold medal match against Venezuela, against Toronto. And I'm like, so, you know, I got used to it being here, you know, being in a hockey country. They just bombard you with hockey 24/7. You know, they'll find hockey highlights from anywhere, CHL, WHL, OHL, PHL, DHL, ZHL, whatever HL, you know, but you got NBA and NCAA going on, you can't get no highlights. You're like, come on, man, you're killing me right now.
And listen, I mean, my foundation is basketball, of course. So shout out to Joe Ward. I support the San Jose Sharks and I watch them games. But listen, man, like, I'm a basketball guy at heart. I need to watch some highlights in the morning, man. I'm sorry, like,
exactly.
I feel like we're going back to the '80s. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You gotta get your fix, man. You want to see what's up? What happened? What did you miss? You gotta go to work in the morning, so you went to bed early. Right, you're gonna miss the 10:30 game.
Right.
Like right now, who's playing later on? Golden State versus Minnesota or something like that.
Right.
You know, might have that game going on. You can't watch it, so you want to get your fix, man. So
yeah.
I know for me, it was tough getting those highlights.
If they're gonna like regress the basketball highlights, shouldn't they put back on like He-Man and Transformers and just really put it back into the 80s spirit at this point?
Thundercats. That's what I'm saying. You might as well.
That's what I'm saying. Let me, you know, yeah, play
Voltron.
Voltron. At least run those cartoons back if I can't watch 80s. If I can't watch highlights, jeez.
And it's the sport is growing so much.
Yeah, that doesn't make it doesn't so make sense. Much. And Toronto now is becoming at a point where it's like it's a hotbed for basketball talent. So it's like, you know, and not just because just for Canada, this is just period. So how do you run back like the highlight footage? I don't understand. I don't get it.
Crazy, man.
I don't get it.
Crazy.
But you know what? Let's move on.
Crazy. Yeah.
So crazy. It's been a weird year so far to start. Like teams you thought that would have been better has been struggling so far. And teams you thought would be mediocre or crap, like the New York Knicks or Orlando, for example, are among the lead leaders in the NBA, especially in the East, right? Go figure. But you know what?
Sorry, go ahead. No, because I remember, you know, everybody was talking about how, like, the first thing I did, you know, with LeBron, you know, getting the alphas from other teams, crying how he needs help. Then he gets Isaiah, he gets D. Rose, and he gets D. Wade. I'm like, this guy is really making sure that he always is in NBA Finals. So everybody thinks the East is just, okay, it's going to be Cleveland, right? You know, the West is getting stacked. Everybody's big three here, big three there. And it's like the teams like Milwaukee, Boston, Hayward going down, you think, oh, you know, season's over. And then, you know, they rally around that and they're doing well. They have the best record in the NBA right now. So it's like, you know, you're always reminded that you still got to show up and play. You still got to roll the ball out. There's only five guys that step on the court. And you know what? You always find a lot of times, though, at least my experience with basketball from what I've seen and being on teams, it's sometimes adversity is good when it happens early. Because now it's like, okay, you have to shift. Your mindset is like, you know what? We're not going to rely on just these two guys. Now it's going to be a team. Now we've got to move the ball, make sure we're getting good shots. Kyrie's going to lead us. I'm talking in the case of Boston. Kyrie's going to lead us. And guys rally around that. You got to play defense. One thing in basketball you got to do is compete and play defense. And the Celtics are doing that. And then, you know, as long as Marcus Smart doesn't touch the ball, they're good. And they, you know, they you don't have to worry.
Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to ask you, first of all, so which player teams to you has been a pleasant surprise this season?
Which team or player?
Either or.
Both? Or, that's a great question. You know, I've been thinking about that. You know who I like on the Lakers? I'm watching them now. Kuzma. Is that his name? Kuzma?
Yeah.
I really like him. I like the way he plays. Like, he's a gamer. Like, he just competes, and he's skilled, and he's nice. So he's actually impressed me, because obviously I've been watching a lot of Lakers games to see how Ball's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I like Ball, but I'm really impressed. Kuzma stands out for me. And I like the way he's playing. I guess the team would definitely have to be, I'm going to have to give it to the Celtics, man. I didn't think, you know, they would be doing, especially after Hayward went down, I didn't think they would be doing as well as they are. So Boston is definitely surprising me, the fact that they have the best record. And Kuzma from the Lakers, I like him. I like the way he plays. I like his game. I really do.
Yeah, you know what? I've been hearing so many things about him from the summer league and stuff, and I'm one of those guys. I try not to put too much stock in summer league stats and production, but you know, I've been hearing from a lot of people like, "Yo, this kid is actually really good," and it's a steal considering that he got drafted late in the first round. So, you got to give him credit for that.
He has a great feel for the game. Yeah, but go on.
For me, I got a few surprises for me anyway. Two players and a team. So for the first player for me was honestly Kristaps Porzingis. I knew he'd be the undisputed leader of the team, and you know obviously they're gonna build around him, of course. And out of anyone on the team, he's gonna be the one getting some of the bigger stats, obviously, because especially with Carmelo being off the team. But I didn't see him dominating the way that he has been this year. I just didn't see that coming. At least not at this point right now. Like, his success right now is carrying this Knicks squad to unexpected success. The guy's averaging 37.5 rebounds, 2.5 blocks. It splits to like 51, 38, 84. I didn't see that coming. Like, the guy's second in the league in scoring. This guy's got an impact on both sides of the floor. He brings it every single night on both sides. I honestly, O'Neal, I did not see that coming from him.
Really?
Not in this sense, where the fact, again, it's probably for me, I think the biggest thing for me is I think it's the scoring average. I didn't see 30 a night coming from him. I was not expecting that. At least not right now. Not at this point of his career yet.
Yeah.
Because the guy's only, what, 22 years old?
Yeah, man. But you know what it is? It's one of those things where, you know, when you have the freedom to make mistakes and do whatever, like, it's your team.
Yeah.
So we're not playing with any hesitation. When you're playing, basically, when you're playing free, and that's what basketball, that's what being confident is about. It's just like, I don't care. Like, you don't care if you miss a shot. You don't care if you mess up. You're like, I'm the man. I can do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And so there's this sense of carefree. And you know what? At being at 7 foot, 7 foot, whatever, and skill, you know, shooting the ball and taking guys off the dribble. Yeah, man. You're right. I didn't think he was going to be balling the way he is. I knew he was going to be. Like, I saw some of it. He did some good stuff last year. He had some highlights last year. He played well last year. So, but yeah, he's definitely really stepping up and playing well and carrying the Knicks.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be something that's going to regress back down to the mean, or do you think this is now the new normal for him now?
No, I think this is the new normal. I think he's – in the NBA, I think you only get better. The way the game is now, the way every team has access to sports medicine, because really, you know, for an athlete, all you have to do is stay healthy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. If you're healthy, then you only get better, because at the end of the day, the game's about reps. And you can only rep the game. You can only see so many situations, so many scenarios play out. After a while, you know what to expect. So as long as you're healthy, right, then you're good. Because your skills don't really diminish. It's your, you know, it's either you're injured, like, your knee starts hurting, your ankle starts hurting, you have these little nagging injuries that will, kind of hinder what you do. But the truth is, the more you play and the more reps and the more you see in the game, the slower it becomes. And, you know what the defense is going to do before they do it. You know what scenario is going to play out before it happens. So I only see him getting better, you know, unless, you know, he gets caught up in the New York nightlife and, you know, just starts doing the booger sugar and just gets this, you know, derailed. But I don't see that happening. He has two older brothers. They're going to, you know, they got him. They seem like he has people in his court to keep him on track, right? Which is huge. You know, he doesn't have the entourage, the yes men, the people who just, you know, who want to get caught up in his hype and, you know, live off of his fame and busting, popping bottles and whatnot. You know, he actually has family members, two older brothers that, you know, looking out for him. So I only see him getting better, man.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a great point, because speaking of freedom, like, and that was a problem I had with the Knicks last year, was at some point it's like, okay, you have to realize this is now Porzingis's team now. It's not Carmelo's team anymore. And you, between And between Carmelo and like guys like Derrick Rose, who, you know, I always loved Derrick Rose, but he doesn't pass as a point guard. I mean, there was right. games where, you know, Derrick Rose is taking 25 shots, and I'm like, how is that possible? You know, and you know, you're yeah. you're playing with Carmelo, and especially Porzingis, like you're kind of stunting his development. You know, so yeah. so seeing it now play out where it's like now he's not only the man, but and now he has more responsibility, and you know, obviously he just improved as well. So I think that's all of that just came together to what he's doing right now. So I think. For me, I think this is the new normal for him. I think this is, I don't think this is the fluke. I think this is what you can expect for the rest of the season going forward. Because as you said, the game has really slowed down for him. And you can see it. You can see the way he's playing. It's just moving very slow for him. Like, meaning like he's seeing everything. It's easy for him now.
Right.
You know, and you don't average 30 points a game. I don't care who you are. You don't average 30 points in the game by accident. That ain't easy to do in the NBA. I don't care who you are. You can't brush that off. You know what I mean? So I think the fact that he's bringing excitement back to the not only just the Madison Square Garden, but what are the NBA's flagship franchises, I think it's important that it's important for his success to basically bring the Knicks back up to where it needs to be. You know what I mean? So I love watching him play. And I don't know if you saw the highlight yesterday, but that, you know, when he got the game-winning layup on Charlotte, it was hilarious because you're watching Malik Monk guarding him, and Malik Monk's high top is reaching the bottom of his sternum, you know, and he's taking him off the dribble. Like, it's like you're looking at this, you're like, yo, this is insane. You know, this guy's 7'3" taking guys off the dribble. Like, this doesn't make sense. My second guy that's honestly been surprising for me a little bit too is Victor Oladipo.
Really?
I didn't see this coming with him either. I'm sure that's had something to do with Miles Turner missing some of the season with a concussion, and somebody has to pick up the scoring load. But at the same time, it really looks like he took on that role of being like the guy right now, even with Miles Turner coming back.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know what? Like, I got turned off from Victor last year because he was playing with
Westbrook.
OKC last year.
Right.
And I don't know if you're just like, okay, I'm going to sit back and let Westbrook do his thing and just not really give a damn. But, like, he didn't really do nothing last year. He was just there.
Right.
Like, I'm like, when I heard that he was there, I was like, okay, he's going to step up, compete, help Westbrook out. This dude was just there, you know, just chilling. And I was disappointed in that. Because I think that says a lot about you. It's like, dude, like, you know, you're with Westbrook. Here's a chance. Or maybe it's Westbrook. Maybe he doesn't, you know, he's just like... Maybe he didn't get along with Westbrook or something. But he didn't really do nothing last year. So that kind of turned me off on him. You know, but I heard, you know, he's making a little bit of noise this year. So I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see what happens going forward. Like I said, again, this is very early. But, I mean, for right now, he's playing really well. And I kind of wonder, too, not necessarily if he had beef with Westbrook, but, you know, sometimes some people's games just don't mesh with the star. You know what I mean? And, I mean, he's not a star player. But I wonder, like, listen, I know everybody loves to, like, praise Westbrook's triple-double, and that was an incredible stat. I'm not going to knock it.
Man,
but the only thing
that was whack.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead. No, because I'm like, you literally saw his teammates not rebound the ball.
For him to get it, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, come on, man. Like, so, it's good. You still have to be able to get a triple double, that's still an accomplishment in itself, but I was like, really? They were not defensive rebounding at all. So most of his rebounds are like defensive rebounds.
Right.
Like he had probably like 9 defensive rebounds or 10 defensive rebounds a game.
Right.
Because they really would not rebound, especially when it was those long, long bad shots.
Yeah, they didn't let him take it.
Yeah, the other team wasn't crashing the boards, they just let him take it. So but yeah, he got it, so but yeah, go ahead.
But honestly, but you gotta wonder, like, as a player looking at that environment, like, do you wonder if this is something that Oladipo could have thrived in going forward? So I don't think the trade was the worst thing for him. You know what I mean? Him being traded back to Indiana, he's back home at his kind of back home and a second home in a sense. So
yeah,
it's not the worst thing. And some of it, like I said, for the first time in his career, he has an actual defined role that he can thrive in. Mm-hmm. Like in Orlando, they're trying to make him play point guard. He's not a point guard. You know, and then he goes to Oklahoma City, but again, it's all encompassing Westbrook environment, so maybe he doesn't thrive in that. But maybe in this situation where they're not expecting a lot, they just want to develop players and see if they could, hopefully, you know, like end of the season, if they can win 35 games, it's a great thing for them. But they're kind of overachieving so far. So I think in this environment, it's probably not the worst thing for him, to be quite honest with you. And going forward, I'm pretty sure, because right now he's averaging 23 a game. I'm sure that's going to probably come down a little bit, especially once Miles Turner like gets healthy and gets his legs under him and stuff.
Right.
You know, but I think he's actually going to have a pretty good year, you know, going forward. At least that's that. But I think it is going to regress down a little bit back to the mean.
That's what you're thinking? That's what you're hoping?
No, I'm thinking it's going to regress down a little bit. I don't think he's going to keep up like averaging 23 a night. Like I don't see that happening. But you know, he's a solid player. So let's see what happens. And the team that I had as my surprise, honestly, is the Detroit Pistons. What the hell's going on there?
Know, I was gonna say that, but then I saw Reggie Jackson play. This guy just turned me off. He was worse than Marcus Smart. I was like, what the hell is this guy doing? When they played the Lakers, this guy was just like, forget everybody. I'm going to go against Lonzo. Yeah. He just made some horror. I was like, this guy is point shaving. His name's not Reggie Jackson. His name is Tony from Blue Chips. Remember Tony? He was failing TV from was point shaving. This guy's point shaving. This guy's killing me right now. I'm like, Tony, what are you doing? Point guard brings the ball up, goes 1-on-5 with a set defense, just jacking up shots. I was like, look at this guy. No one, I'm like, this guy. And then you just see him take the life out of the Pistons. Nobody wanted to play. But, yeah, I was thinking about them as well. I was thinking about them. But, nah, but I have to give to Boston. Kyrie's just doing a great job of leading the team. But, yeah, I can see Detroit because I was thinking about Detroit as well. Like I said, Reggie Jackson turned me off.
Right. But he has been playing better this year, though. I mean, I didn't see that Laker game. I don't deny what you're saying. It seems like he's having less – you know, knuckleheaded moments, you know what I mean? At least this season. And he's healthy. So I think, you know, so that's part of it. And, you know, and that was one of those teams that last year they kind of underachieved. So I think this year they're probably trending back to where, closer to what they should be. But I think the biggest reason for the success, honestly, is how much Andre Drummond has improved. His role has changed. He's no longer just, they no longer just have him posting up on the block and, or just doing the regular involved. Pick and roll. Yeah, like he's more involved in the offense. He's in the high post. He's making decisions. He's averaging like a career high in assists. It's like 3 assists a game, but he's 8th among centers, which is fine. And honestly, watching his success, it reminds me of 2 things that I deem important when it comes to basketball. Number one, like no matter your height, size, position that you play, you need to learn all aspects of the game and be a triple threat. Like, so you may be better at some skills more so than others, but at least learn all the fundamentals so that you're never uncomfortable whatever position that you're put in, right? And then, two, when you share the ball and everybody touches the ball and gets involved, you feel, as a player, you feel a sense of ownership over the game.
Your second reason wasn't having different holes and different area codes? It was touching the ball?
That was the third reason. That was the third reason.
Oh, okay. That was the third reason. As an NBA player, having different
holes. Yeah. That was the third reason. That was the third reason.
That's what's gonna make you successful, Calvin.
Yeah. And have a burner and have a burner phone for that. Have a burner phone for that.
No, you're right. You're right. Definitely, you know what? Yeah. When you're touching the ball, man, like it's so interesting. When you add a basketball, you know, put a basketball in a person's hands, just how their mental state changes, and you know, getting so much touches and their confidence level, the trust factor, the way they play the game, you know, their energy level, you know, like everything, you know, just you're right. When guys are touching the ball, they play better, right?
Yeah,
more involved, and so you can thank Ron Jeremy for that.
Yeah,
I mean, sorry, Stan Van Gundy. We thank him for that.
But it's true though. Like I think it's put him in a position where he's more willing to do more things to help the team. It's almost like you know, working in an office where your manager allows you to have a say and values your opinion. It makes you want to go to bat for them, and it makes you want to take more pride in your work. So it's kind of like the same thing. For him, it's not surprising that he's leading the league in rebounds. That's what he does, you know. But here's the biggest thing. Here's the biggest shocker. I think this is probably the biggest shocker of the season so far. He's averaging 75% from the line. 75%.
That's really good.
Listen, about 2 to 3 years ago, he had the worst free throw percentage in the history of basketball. He was shooting 38%. He was shooting 38%. 38% from the line, O'Neal. This guy was averaging 38%. Even Shaq never shot that bad from the line.
Wow.
So to go from 38% to now you're at 75%, like that is that is transformational. That is transformational. And at this point now, like, you don't have to no longer say, oh man, they're gonna do a Shaq of Drummond on, they're gonna do a hack of Drummond on this guy now, and now we gotta take him out of the game. You can now keep him in the end of games because he's gonna make free throws.
Andre Drummond, right?
Andre, listen, I had to triple take look at this stat. He's averaging 75% for the line. I mean, if he can keep this up.
Andre Drummond.
Andre Drummond. I'm telling you right now.
63%.
75%. Hey, man.
Where are you looking this up at?
Hey, listen, man. Hey, Google it.
I know they'll teach you math at Eastern.
Hey, stop it.
Right now.
Stop it.
The percent I got is, I'm looking up right now, NBA stats. 63% right now. 63.8. I'll give him 64. But it's still better because you know what? Oh, no. Last year he was 60. You're right. You know what? You're right. Because they have, this was last year, 2017, 2000. Oh, this is this year's stats. Yeah, 63%. Last year he was 38%. So, I think one game is probably. I think he must have went down. But you know what? What's interesting too about Andre Drummond?
Right,
dude. In the last since 2013-14 season, he's played 81 games. This guy.
He's healthy. Yeah.
This guy's healthy. He stays healthy too. So that could be it, too. The fact that he's always been healthy and just getting better.
And getting the reps in. Yeah, I mean, that could be part of it. But, I mean, the free throw thing was like, you know, that was one of those things where it's like, he looked like he saw a ghost every time he was at the line. And now if he's able to, you know, I said, to me, if he can make at least 60% of his shots from the line, then it's like you could at least now be able to keep him in games. But if he's going to trend to that now, like... Yo, it's a huge difference because you don't like no like with 2 minutes to go, you're not looking to sub him out. That's a big deal.
Exactly.
And
you can't really kind of do Hacker Drummond, so it's good.
Yeah, no,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And that's what you know what, and that's what you always want to see with players. You always want to see because I think as an athlete, it's always about development, always about getting better, like day to day, game to game, year to year. You know, and you want to see guys improve. You know, and sometimes unfortunately. Especially in the NBA, because I watch NBA a lot. I don't really watch a lot of, you know, maybe football. You hate to see those guys that, you know, they just, you know, they signed the big check, and they're just like, I'm in cruise control.
Right.
Or, you know, till a year before my contract's up, and then I have to go contract year, and then I'll ball out again and get some more money. But, you know, it's always great to see guys always looking to be, you know, be the best and just get better. I don't know, is this a contract year? Maybe that's why he's balling out.
I got to check, actually.
I know.
I hope that's not the case. But
I'm gonna go check to see if it's a contract here.
Well, you know what? Well, you know what? While you're looking into that, let's look at the our early season MVPs. Who would you have, judging from the first month of the season so far? Who would you rank as your top three MVP candidates?
Kyrie Irving. I had it. Kyrie Irving, Giannis. And who was my third? Oh my God. Who was my third?
James Harden, LeBron.
No, Anthony Davis. LeBron. Don't ever mention LeBron. Anthony Davis.
Wow, Anthony Davis, okay.
What?
I'm not knocking Anthony Davis, but you know what? Because I'm thinking that, you know, DeMarcus Cousins kind of offsets takes away some votes from him because he's playing well too. Why do you say Anthony Davis? I mean, right now, I'm looking at it, they're actually in a playoff spot as of tonight, as of this recording. They're in a playoff spot.
They are
eighth overall, but you know, it's like, again, it's really early. But yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, he's,
you know,
he's,
what I just I really like Anthony Davis. I mean, first of all, I like Kyrie, what Kyrie's doing for the Celtics. You know, because, again, everybody gave him a hard time for leaving and whatnot.
Right.
And the fact that he's leading them, you know. And here's my thing on Kyrie. I think back to Michael Jordan. You know, Michael Jordan learned to win. You know, Michael Jordan was a gunner. But he learned to win. He learned to carry his team and make his team successful and win. Kobe Bryant studied Michael Jordan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kobe Bryant learned to lead a team and learn how to win. Because Michael Jordan couldn't do it in his first couple of years, but then he learned. Kobe couldn't do it in his first few years, but then he learned.
Yeah.
And I think it was
him and Shaq learned. But yeah,
Yeah, but it was the same thing with Kyrie. Kyrie, you know, people were looking at, oh, well, you know, his first 2 years he wasn't winning. Like his first 2 years,
he was like a baby.
He didn't have he was a baby and he didn't have anybody. And he was more of a scorer than a facilitator. So now the way he's leading Boston, he's always poised, under control. Look at this. You know, I'm just watching a game right now. He just hustled back and got a steal from Kuzman, or was it Jordan Clarkson? Anyway, so, you know, he's leading the team. So that's why I always knew he would be successful, because he, you know, when they won, the first person he called was Kobe.
Right.
Right? So you know he's picking Kobe's brain. And you know Kobe, being the Zen master that he is now, you know, just giving him nuggets, giving him little nuggets, you know, little things to help him be successful, little things that help him be a leader, little things, you know, to help him carry the team. So that's why Kyrie's my number one. Giannis, I mean, the guy's 6'11". I really like skilled players. And when I say skilled, I mean guys that could create off the dribble, you know. He's not a great shooter yet, but the guy just gets buckets. He's so long. He can finish in different ways. And, you know, and I like Anthony Davis, again, because he's 6'11", but he's a better shooter than Giannis.
Right.
And he's skilled, so... I like those guys. Those are my guys. Those are your three.
I mean, I have most of that list the same as yours, because I have Giannis and I have Kyrie Irving. I can't knock Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has been a beast. The only thing with Anthony Davis I like to say is that, you know, I want him to stay healthy, because he always seems to miss about 10 to 15 games a year, you know, and hopefully that can stop. And I had a chance to watch them play Sacramento, but I think when they played against Sacramento, and he didn't play, but DeMarcus Cousins was he was the only one that was healthy out of the two of them that night, and it was nice to watch because he seemed very, you know, you're never gonna shake the whole knucklehead spirit away from you, but it was as calm as I've ever seen it. And considering that he was coming back to Sacramento, you know, your emotions are running high, and watching the way he just completely picked apart that team, the two of them together, like there hasn't been like a period where they need to grow and play together. They've just been on it from day one. It's just, can they build around them properly with the rest of the team? Is that, I don't know.
But right now,
like, yeah, Davis is, he's been a beast, but it's just, can he stay healthy? You know what I mean? So like, nothing that he does necessarily surprises me, of course. The only guy I would substitute out for AD is James Harden, just because, I mean, I'm looking at just some of the stats. God, this guy's, I mean, mind you, he's playing in a Mike D'Antoni offense, but the guy is the best, you know, shooting guard in the NBA. He's, when you're averaging almost 30 a night with, you know, 9.5 assists, like, it's just hard to do, man. Like, it's really hard to do. While at the same time, your team is the best in the league, or at least the best in the Western Conference as of tonight, as of this recording. I mean, it's a status quo for him, but I mean, the stats are probably going to come down a little bit for him once CP3 gets back. But I don't know how much more. I mean, so I'm sure some of the assists will go down a little bit, but I think the points might stay about the same. Like, again, the guy's, he's an awesome player. Like, there's no surprise. He's an awesome player. And I think he's, as long as he's clicking on all cylinders, he's going to be a top five candidate for MVP every single year. That's just the way it is.
Always.
Yeah. He's just a beast. It's just the way it is. One thing I'll add with the Kyrie thing that, you know, and I've mentioned this in previous podcasts before is, well, actually, I'll come at it another way. Everybody likes to look at Kyrie and say, you know, like, I can't believe he would leave LeBron James. You know, like, why would you leave the best player in the NBA? Especially a player that is not only one of the best to ever play, but he's not completely unselfish. Like, he's, you know, he likes to share the ball as well. But the way I look at it is like this. Some players are meant to be a Robin, right? Yes. Was Kyrie ever really a Robin?
No.
I say no. You know, I say no. And the reason why I say that too is because, yes, everybody likes to look at, you know, the success he didn't have, you know, before LeBron came back home. But as we mentioned earlier, he was a kid and the team sucked and the coaching sucked. You know what I mean? So did LeBron help him in terms of, you know, helping him learn how to win and stuff? Yes, you can't take that away from him. But let's not act like LeBron built Kyrie. You know, I hate hearing that point that if it wasn't for LeBron James, this guy would have no idea what he's doing. And it's like, okay, let's slow that down. Like, this guy did sign a max contract before he got there. You know, that wasn't a fluke. He did have his own shoes before he got there. That wasn't a fluke.
That's the reason. That's why LeBron went there, because he knew, he recognized how special Kyrie was.
Yeah, of course.
He recognized that this guy's a killer. That's why he went there. He recognized that, you know what? When I'm scared to take that big shot, I can just pass the ball to Kyrie, and he's gonna he has that Mamba mentality.
But you know, and to take it even further than that, though, O'Neal, and I bring up the Kobe Shaq thing. Like, listen, I know you're a Kobe guy, and I'm always the one that's like, listen, man, like Shaq was the guy those first three championships, and he was, but
no, he wasn't.
But what I'll say is
he wasn't.
No, hold on a second, let me finish. I'll say that, and I'm saying that to say that Kobe, just because of that, doesn't mean Kobe was a Robin. Kobe was just as good as Shaq, and it's like looking at. Like, when you look at Cleveland now and you're watching how they're struggling, like, sure, some of it is, you know, like, it's a bunch of new players. They're all trying to, you know, figure things out and get it back together. But, A, they're an older team. I still think they're probably going to make the finals. But they're an older team. And on top of that, you know, they're missing Isaiah Thomas. So Isaiah Thomas has to come back. But at the same time, you see where Kyrie's missed. Because those games where now that they're losing – those are shots that Kyrie said, okay, well, give it to me then. I'll take those
exactly,
shots. You know?
Exactly.
And it's okay, because sometimes, like, it's like, yeah, some guys are built to be a Robin. I don't think Kyrie was ever built to be a Robin. I think people just put him in that box.
Exactly. Kyrie's not a Robin. And, you know, people are talking about Kyrie the same way they talk about Kobe. Oh, you play with this great player, you know, you should sit back. And these are people who are not killers. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand, there's people who are killers. Now, that's what I learned about basketball. You have people who are killers. You know, there's those two kind of basketball players, ultimately. You have killers and you have non-killers. And non-killers are the ones that most non-killers gravitate toward LeBron James. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, yeah, you know, he gets his teammates involved. He does this and that. I'm like, yeah, that's great. That is great. But I like killers. I like guys that seize that moment that, you know what, I'm going to step on your throat. I'm going to slice your throat. I'm going to bomb your head. I'm going to snipe you. I'm going to, you know... And Larry Bird was a killer. Larry Bird was unselfish, but he was also a killer. He knew when to get his teammates involved and then slowly just start killing you. And, you know, Kobe Bryant was a killer. And, you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, you should sit back and let Shaq. And I argue this all the time. And I know it's because people who never watched the Lakers and I was a Kobe Bryant fan. So I knew everything about Kobe and the Lakers. And what people don't realize is Shaq was one of my favorite players coming out of college.
Yeah, who didn't love Shaq from LSU? Who didn't love Shaq? Yeah.
I still like Shaq, but not as much, just for the simple fact that Shaq was lazy. Shaq never worked hard. Shaq was always hurt at the beginning of the season. And people expected Kobe Bryant, who's the opposite of Shaq, who lived in the gym and worked hard, just to step aside when Shaq came. Like, and that's why I know some of these people don't know what it means to be in a gym, putting up jump shots in the gym by yourself 3 hours. Putting up shot, working on your game, getting better. For you just to say, oh, you put in all that work, now you're going to step aside for a guy who doesn't put in all that work. Are you kidding me? It doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Kobe's, you know, he's an alpha. He's not going to, wait a minute. I'm in the gym working this hard, putting up this much shots and working on my game to sit back for a guy who I know is lazy, who uses half the season to get in shape, and I know I can play, and I'm supposed to take a backseat to this guy? Come on, man. And then people kept forgetting that when they won the first championship against Indiana, Kobe was the one that beat Indiana because Shaq was hurt or in foul trouble, whatever it was, struggling. So at the end of the day, I always say Shaq didn't carry Kobe. Kobe carried Shaq. I don't care what people say because Kobe was putting up buckets. And when Shaq's ass was abdominal strain, you know, how do you get an abdominal strain when you're fat? You know what I mean? This guy had abdominal strain. His big toe was hurting him because he was always out of shape. And Kobe was carrying the Lakers, and it's a disrespect to Kobe, and that's why Kobe was like, forget that. But the LA management knew that because they were internal, and they knew, they saw how hard Kobe worked. Not only was he younger, but he had a better work ethic. And you can't be, you have a team who is only successful as their best player, and your best player has to be your hardest worker. And it's the same thing with Kyrie. Kyrie's sitting back, Kyrie's talented, he could play. He's hitting big shots, and all people were talking about was LeBron's block. I'm like, are you kidding me? This guy hit the biggest shot to win them their first championship. They talk about LeBron's block. Like, Kyrie's shot was nothing. Like, oh, hum. you know, that's the shot LeBron is afraid to take. And I think for Kyrie, it was like, you know what? I'm not going to sit back. I've already been disrespected hitting the big shot. Now LeBron's debating whether he's going, he's staying, where he's going, he's staying. I'm not going to let LeBron dictate my future. I'm going to take my future into my own hands. I've already won a chip. So it's not like I'm pulling a Tracy McGrady. I'm leaving a team to go chase the dollars and be the man somewhere else. I got my chip. Now I'm going to go try and lead. Now I'm going to look for a challenge somewhere else, and I'm going to go lead a team. That's a challenge for Kyrie, and that's why I love him, because he's taking on this challenge. He wants to see who he is as a basketball player. Can he lead a team to a championship? And that's the ultimate, because if you think about it, that's what Michael Jordan had to do. He had to get past the Pistons, who knocked him out in the first round 2 years in a row. Right? So that's where you find out who you are as a basketball player. You dig down deep and see what you're made of and what you can accomplish when people say that you can. And then Kobe did the same thing when Shaq was gone. You can't win a chip without Shaq. You can't do this. And Kobe won 2 chips without Shaq. So I totally support what Kyrie's doing. I understand what he's doing. And I can't wait to see what he does, because I know he's going to figure it out. And I think he's going to keep going until he does lead the team to a championship.
Now to touch on your point, though, don't you think that basically that Kyrie pulled a LeBron? Because when LeBron was in Miami, right, you know, his contract came up and everybody's trying to figure out what to do and try to keep this big three. He looked at the landscape and said, you know what? I love playing with Bosh. I love playing with my boy Wade, but this team is old. And, you know, he started looking at the landscape and he's like, and I want more power. So you're looking back at, hey, you know what? Here's Cleveland. This team is young. Wow, they got Kyrie. Kyrie's a beast. Oh, they just drafted Wiggins. We can flip that for something else now. And look at these pieces. Yeah. We can start building on this horizon. So I think, looking at Kyrie's situation, Kyrie probably looked at this situation and said, okay, well, I don't know if this guy's going to leave. You know, this guy's not telling me anything. I've done everything I could do as a player. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm still young, and my ceiling is high, but I've played in all these big games these last 3 years. I've dominated just like you've dominated in a lot of cases. And now look, this team is built around you and this team is old. If you leave, now I got to carry this old team. You know, with the coach I don't totally trust, with a management and front office situation that has been unstable pretty much the whole time I've been here. And where do I go from here? What do I need to do with my career? So for that, I don't knock him for doing that. You know what I mean? Because again, LeBron kind of set that precedent, right? Like he's been doing that, and that's okay. So now players can now do that too. And
well, yeah.
And that's where it's at.
Exactly. So Team LeBron is like, listen, you know, his brain trust is like, listen, this is what we're doing, right? So, like, don't get it twisted. It's his brain trust that makes the decision. LeBron's just a front man, and they tell him what to do. And you know, it's like they're reading the tea leaves, and it's like, okay, let's bounce, let's go play with this kid, Kyrie. But yeah, at the end of the day, they flip the script. Before, you know, these GMs were holding these players, you know, kind of like holding the cards, holding the players, they made the decisions. LeBron's like, you know what? I'm going to take that out of your hands now. I'm going to make the decision.
Yeah. And so, which I give him props for.
I definitely do. So now you have to force these GMs to like, okay, you guys don't have the power anymore. The players have the power. And they're actually, you know what? The players always had the power. They're just like Neo. They didn't know how to use it until LeBron kind of showed them. Mm-hmm. LeBron's like Morpheus. He's like, listen, this is going to access the power. And you know, they start using the power because they had a lot of power. And it's like, now we can dictate. Like, yeah, you know what? I'm gone. If you don't get me a good team, I'm out. You know, and the owner's like, okay. And so look what LeBron's doing, right? You get again, they went in and got Isaiah, Derrick Rose, and D-Wade, right?
Plus Crowder and, yeah, and all these other pieces as well, yeah.
I don't really count Crowder. Like, he's not, to me, he's not going to really do anything. He's just another J.R. Smith, actually, but not as crazy. So, but Isaiah's the one. Isaiah's the big shot maker. He's the killer. He's the guy that steps up when big shots need to be made. The only thing with Isaiah though is, and teams know this, this guy is short, and they're gonna exploit him on the defensive end. So, mm-hmm. I know he can make up for it with big shots. He'll clutch shots. But we'll see what they do, how they exploit him defensively, you know, when they take advantage of him during the playoff time, just isolate him in the post and create mismatches. So But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, LeBron showed the players that they have the power, showed the players how to utilize the power that they have. And so guys, you know, guys are just now caught, you know, players are not making
decisions. They're not making a decision. And that's the thing. Like, yeah. So it's like LeBron can look at the situation and be like, yeah, he could take it as it's a shot to him that somebody of that caliber would want to leave under his, guidance and stuff. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? Again, he kind of set the precedent. So he's got to, at the same time, be like, you know what? I got to respect it.
Yeah. You know what it's like? It's like my relationship. I'm the good looking one in my relationship. Like,
wow.
My wife. I'm the better looking one.
You better not make her listen to this.
No, she's right beside me. You know, I it's my looks that keep up the relationship. But like, you know, in some relationships, while you're looking at me, while she's giving me a side eye. But you know, in some relationships, you have those either, it could be a guy or a girl where, you know, they're the best, you know, they've always been the best looking. They've always been the one that people want to get with,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, and they're always the one that ends the relationship. They do the dumping.
Right.
And so when somebody dumps them, they're just like shocked. They're like, what? You broke up with me? Are you crazy? And that's what it's like with LeBron. He was so shocked that Kyrie was like, beat him to it. Like, no, you're not going to break up with me. I'm going to break up with you first. And so LeBron was just like, he was just hurt because he's the one that usually does the breaking up.
That's a good analogy. You know,
exactly. Everybody just sitting there, you know. Like, he's like that hot girl, the hot guy, you know, you don't want to, you know his track record, but, you know, you're hoping he doesn't do it to you. Kyrie was like, forget that. I'm breaking up with you first. See you later, buddy. I'm out. So mm-hmm. I'm glad he did that, man. I'm glad he did that. He took his future into his own hands and he left.
It's funny. Just to sidetrack for a second. I remember one of my exes in college. I remember one of the things she used to say was something I always followed in the back of my head. I remember she used to be like, yeah, you know what? Whenever I... You know, I'm in a relationship and things go sideways and we break up. These guys, they always want to get back with me. They always want to get back with me and try to get back to this. And I remember I always used to file that in my head. I used to be like, okay, yeah, if we ever break up, that's not going to be me. And I remember afterwards, after we broke up, I remember I think she used to want me more because I used to give her the Heisman. I used to give her the, you know, the bam. Like, I used to be like, nah, I'm good. Because I always remember that conversation, right?
And just mess with her head. She's
yeah.
Like, what? You don't want me back? Everybody wants to be back. She's like, no.
No, like, I'm good. I'm good. You know,
we
could move on. But it's a great analogy. Exactly. It's a great analogy. Yeah, but
that's exactly what it is. Like, LeBron's used to breaking people's hearts, and they sit around and take it and wait for him to do it. But Kyrie's like, nah, homie. I'm out. And you know what? And Kyrie was professional. You know, he went to management. He didn't go on Twitter. He didn't have it announced. He didn't do the decision. He just, as a professional, went to management and said, listen, you know what? I'd like to move on. You know, gave them the heads up, right? And LeBron, you know, LeBron camp got a hold of it, and they tried to throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
Make him look like a bad guy.
And you know what? And I'll just touch on this other point, too, just before I move on. But listen, I love Giannis. Giannis has been one of my favorite players that I've been waiting to watch this whole season, and he's exceeded my expectations. The guy's been amazing. I love him. Like, he's just, I keep saying that if this guy gets a consistent jumper, he's going to own the league. Like, he's been amazing. And again, O'Neal, he's only 22 years old. It's insane
how crazy
talented this guy is. And he just signed a big deal with Nike. I wish it was Adidas, but it's Nike. But it's whatever. It's fine. They got a non-American, an international player that's going to come in and blow the roof off with them and try to take over Europe even more. You know, like it's crazy, the guy's talent. But Kyrie's my MVP so far this season right now. Just to touch on your point where he's saying about LeBron kind of setting the trends and stuff. Like, LeBron has been the best and one of the best players in NBA history. He's the best player right now. Whatever, you know, I'm not going to take anything away from him. But one thing I'll say is this, like, you know, like, LeBron always wants to have stacked teams around him. That's what the NBA is now. Cause look at Golden State. That's just what it is. But what I don't think one people underestimate is that I think that he also wants to have his stacked guys take up secondary roles too, because that's what makes the teams greater. Because think about it. Like, since he's been team stacking, right? Yeah. Has he ever really had to sacrifice that much of his game, really?
Exactly.
Like, think about it. You know what I mean? Like, Bosh had to sacrifice. Yeah. Wade had to finally take a step back. But LeBron, did LeBron really have to take a step back? You look at the stats, it's pretty similar.
The man, listen, the man is spoiled, man. He gets what he wants. The man's a diva, gets what he wants. Everybody capitulates to LeBron. So that's what he, you know, that's exactly how it is. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, he wants you to come play with him, and then he wants you to sacrifice. You know, you're going to sacrifice your game, right? So
Cause
that's
look,
exactly how...
No, and I was going to say, look at Kevin Love. Like, Kevin Love is a guy that's now, he's... Like, if he ever was to leave Cleveland, I don't know if he can go back to being the same player he was when he was in Minnesota, because I think so much time has passed. He's been put in this role player box for so long that and had to sacrifice so much for so long. I think Kyrie was the one that bucked against it. I was like, no, I'm not sacrificing. Yeah. I'm going to do this. And eventually LeBron had to just, you know, conform to that. You know what I mean? But I think it's a fair question to ask. And I think going back to Kyrie's point and why I think I love how he's playing so far this season is that you could see at the end of it all, he just wanted his game to grow. Like, I don't think it was about him being the man and I wanted to take all the shots, because look, he was averaging 25 a game. He was the highest scorer on the team last year. So I think if it was about just getting buckets, he would have just stayed. So I don't think it was just about that. You know what I mean? I think for him, he wanted to grow his game as a point guard, and you can't really grow your game as a point guard if you're in the corner waiting for the ball to come to you. You know what I mean? So at some point, he had to say, you know what? Like, listen, I know the situation's a good situation, but I need to see what my potential, like, where the potential lays in me. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, it's like, you're looking at Boston, they got young pieces. Like, yes, he's the guy, but he's been in so many great situations in terms of the last 3 years of being in all these pressure situations. Yeah, why not let him see if he can be a leader of a team? And I think he could. He has the smarts for it. Mm-hmm. He definitely has he honestly might be the best one-on-one player in the NBA. Like, the guy is incredible in terms of scoring, in terms of ball handling, the difficult shots, the angles that he takes. Kyrie, yeah. Like, he's amazing. He's amazing. And the game is so easy to him right now. It's disgusting. Yep. Like, it's so slow. Even watching this game tonight, as of this recording, watching the Lakers game, I was watching the first quarter before I started prepping for the podcast, but I'm looking at the way this guy's just breaking the game down, and it's silly. It's silly. It's silly how easy it is. But he's also leading the team, sharing the ball. His defense is better. He's fourth in the league in steals. You know what I mean? Oh, sorry, he's second in the league, not fourth. He's second in the league in steals. And I don't know if he would have been this kind of a leader had he stayed in Cleveland.
It's what I was saying, man. It's you see the game after you see the game been playing, you know, long enough, the game slows down. Mm-hmm. And it's like you move it in slow motion. You just take your time, get to your spots, and then, you know, you go fast when you need to go fast, you go slow when you need to go slow, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing about the game. It just, you know when to go fast, when not to go fast, you know, and that's why, Isaiah Thomas is like that too.
Yeah.
Isaiah, if you watch Isaiah Thomas play, he's one of the fastest guys in the league, but he's always jogging.
He's always in control.
He's always jogging, always under control, and then he just changes speed, boom, gone. Then he just slows down again. So, you know, when you have a feel for the game and the game, you know, you see the game so much, you become good, man. And yeah, Kyrie's definitely playing at that level. And again, the fact that they have the best record in the NBA and they just won now, what, 11 in a row? He's my MVP right now.
Yeah. I would definitely say that. You know what? We probably don't have enough time to talk about the Raptors. Listen, we're going to have a lot of time this season to talk about the Toronto Raptors, being that they're the local team, the Canada's team. So we'll be able to talk about them later.
I wanted to talk about RJ Barrett.
No, of course. We're going to get to that. I'm talking about the Raptors. I'm skipping the Raptors so we can get to that.
Okay, good.
Don't worry. Like, I know we're going to...
Oh, okay, I thought you were ending it. I was like,
I thought you were gonna bottle me over there, man. Hold on. Put down the Heineken bottle. Don't worry, we're gonna get to him. But the only thing I'll say about the Raptors is I like their second unit. I like Poeltl and I like Siakam, how they're playing. They're showing their worth. I've been a fan of OG Anunoby when he was in Indiana. I thought that was a steal of a pick. You can see he's still getting his legs under him. There's a lot to like about the Raptors, but the only question I'll ask you before we move on to, you know, to RJ and everything else is, what do you think they need to do to be a real championship contender at this point? Because obviously this team is not a championship team right now. They're a playoff contender, not a championship contender. In your opinion, what does it take for them to get to that level?
They need that third guy, man. I don't think Serge Ibaka is that third guy.
No.
they need that third guy. I think they need a third guy to give them two superstars. When I say that, this is what I mean. I think when it comes to the playoffs, Lowry's like half and DeRozan's half, so that gives you one. And they need like another superstar. No, seriously. Mm. Like, you're not winning with Lowry and DeRozan. That's been proven. It's not, that's fact. You're not winning with those two guys.
Right.
People were saying that Lowry, don't get me wrong, I like regular season Kyle Lowry because you step up and hit shots. But to me, you're made in the playoffs. The playoffs is who you're about. Mm-hmm. And I've been disappointed. Like, I always thought Lowry would transfer that to the playoffs, like that clutch gene, stepping up, hitting big shots, seizing the moment. But he hasn't. He disappears, and people are like, oh, he's tired. I'm like, he's not tired. It's mental.
It's a mental thing.
Right? Yeah. It's a mental thing. And for whatever reason, maybe he's overthinking it. Whatever reason, he's doubting himself. He needs to do what LeBron did and get a psychologist and just starts reading a book before he plays or meditating, then some chakra, something, get his head in the right headspace and make sure he's ready for these tournaments. Like, you need to change it up.
I'm laughing, but you're right, though. Yeah, I'm laughing, but you're right.
Yeah. Whatever he's been doing, you got to change it because it hasn't working. And it's not nothing to do with your time, but they definitely need another superstar to help them take some big shots. I really love their young players. I love DeLong. People talk about DeLong, right? Like, everybody's saying bad stuff about him. Like, are you crazy? You watch this guy play. He has a great feel for the game. He's long. Mm-hmm. He's crafty. Van Fleet. Like, if you have those four guys give you a quarter, you know, Porto, Van Fleet.
Plus Norm Powell.
DeLong, right? You know, or they give you one-fifth and they make you a whole player. Like, if those guys just keep developing and stepping up, you know what I mean? They could help you out, man. Like, they're playing well right now.
Yeah, I think the future is bright for those young players. But you're right. I said this in the NBA Eastern Conference preview podcast that we did a couple of weeks back. I said that the management is for this season is hoping one of these young players or a couple of these young players step up beyond expectations. You know what I mean? Like, not saying they'll be that third guy or third superstar. Although, if that happens, incredible. That's more than what they could have bargained for. But they're hoping that a couple of these young players, because they're good, but they're hoping a couple of these young players step up above expectations to help lead these guys. Like, whether it's...
You know what?
Sorry, go ahead.
You know what? We know we need them to have a Mike Bibby or a Sam Cassell moment. Remember Sam Cassell's rookie season when he used to Rockets?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he was a rookie, and he just stepped up. And remember when he always, like, hold his hand under his between his legs, like big balls.
Yeah,
like we need, and then Mike Bibby when he came into league as a rookie season in the playoffs with Sacramento, like he just hit big shots. Whoever he was with, I can't remember if it was Sacramento or was it? It was with Sacramento.
Yeah, when he got to Sacramento.
So you know, you just need those like Sam Cassell moments, those rookies to step up, those young players to step up and just have a coming up party. You know what I mean? Somebody have a coming up party.
Yeah,
whether it's DeLon Wright or Van Fleet, just somebody step up and hit some
Powell or somebody. Yeah, they're hoping one of these guys becomes that guy.
Yeah, seize the moment, you know, because when it comes to playoff time, which is the real season, by the way, which is the real NBA season, when people are actually scouting and the energy levels turned up and every single possession counts, like it's March Madness, you know, like it's college basketball, and the guys, you know, their ass gets tight and they go hide in the corner. You know, you want to see who steps up. And it's not just being a shot taker, but a shot maker, right? Who are the shot makers? You know, who's going to make shot, lock in, and just knock down a shot? Because at the end of the day, we know they're going to do what they did last year. Teams are going to key in on DeRozan. Teams are going to key in on
Lowry. Yeah.
Lowry. So guys are going to have to step up and be shot makers. I'm looking to see which one of the Raptors are going to do that.
Switching gears for a second, I understand you had a chance to coach RJ Barrett over the summer.
I did.
As we were getting to, right? So tell the listeners, for those who haven't seen him play, what his game is about. You know, obviously seeing that he led the junior national team to a world championship this past summer, and he played great. Like, what?
Yeah.
Break it down. Like, let us know for the people who haven't seen him. Like, what's his game about?
Honestly, it's so funny, but think James Harden. Like, the way he was playing and the way he's Euro-stepping and the way he's crafty with the ball and the way he, like, RJ Barrett gets buckets. When I was coaching him, I was watching him. I'm like, this kid gets buckets. Right hand, left hand, floaters. If he has to shoot a pull up, like his shot mechanics is not there yet. But he was still getting when he needed to. Mm-hmm. He would knock down that 3-point shot when he needed to. He would hit that pull up jump shot. He didn't take them often, but when he took them, he hit them. I'm like, this kid just gets buckets. And so that's how I would describe his game. If you think James Harden, the way he penetrates, he gets to the free throw line a lot. Like every game, he was getting to the free throw line at least 10 to 15 times every game that we played during the AAU season. He just knew how to draw contact. He's athletic. I would see him do a Euro step and just, most guys when they do a Euro step, they lay it up. RJ is doing Euro step and banging on dudes. Like he just, and he's smart. He's a very smart kid. And he's at the point where, like, he has a certain swag. He has the asshole factor, which is what I love. You know, you have to be an asshole when you're on the basketball court. And he has that asshole factor. He doesn't short. You know, he's not going to thump his chest and stick his chest out. But he walks with this silent confidence. He doesn't say anything. He just walks. You know, he just straight look on his face. He gets on the court. You know, guys, you see guys trying to get in his head. They're bumping him. They're talking trash. They're trying to hold his shirt. He just keeps his hand above his head, doesn't say nothing, looks at the ref, doesn't get caught up in the trash talking and the players trying to bait him. He gets the ball. He's great in transition. He's really amazing in transition. You know, he gets the ball in the open court. He's slicing, dicing through guys, finishing with his left hand again, finishing with his right hand, dunking. You know, he'll come up. You know, hit a pull-up jump shot. So if I was to describe his game, just think of James Harden. He's not as – he's a, when I say James Harden, again, I mean crafty like James Harden.
Right, right.
You know, as a lefty getting to the rim and finishing. You know, his handles is not as tight as – you know, he's not going to shift you and break your ankles like James Harden does. He's not going to make you dance like James Harden.
But he's young at this time.
Yeah, exactly. But he does enough to, you know, he's explosive. So, you know, he'll get that step on you and attack the rim. You know, you cut him off. You know, he'll give you a pump fake, you know, spin the other way. So, you know, he's just a crafty player. He's a smart player. He understands the game. And he's super athletic. So, yeah, it was really a pleasure coaching him. The game I tell everybody about is, you know, we were playing against Tim Hunter. Anthony Hardaway.
AAU team, right. Team.
And he has a couple guys on his team that can go. Like, they're nice. And they're like RJ's height, 6'7", 6'8", long, athletic. They're nice. So mm-hmm. the first play, you know, I can't remember his name, but the guy, you know, one of the best player on Penny's team, he gets the ball right at the elbow, you know, gives RJ a fake baseline, comes back middle, hits a turnaround J. You know, the crowd's in the stands, they're going nuts. You know, RJ comes back down at the other end, so you think he's going to go right back at him, or at least he wants to. They send a double team at him. You know, I'm like, oh, come on, man. You can't let him go. RJ's ISO and want to play one-on-one defense on him. And, you know, you're not going to let this guy D RJ up. But anyways, they were double teaming RJ the whole game, and RJ got buckets. RJ went off for 38, and they were double teaming him the whole game. Sometimes they send triple teams at him.
Wow.
And he was just finding ways to split the triple teams, getting around guys and getting to the bucket. And it wasn't that he was, and it wasn't even like he was making bad decisions. He just got faster. He just uses craftiness, he uses his explosiveness, he uses length, you know, to sidestep them and get around them. So that's what that game really impressed me. When he was getting double teamed, triple teamed by 6'8", 6'9", athletic guys,
and it wasn't phasing him.
It didn't phase him at all. He was still able to drop 38, get to the free throw line. So that's when I'm like, this kid is special. So yeah, I'm looking forward to doing big things, man. And he's, you know, I think he's learning a lot from his dad. You know, I think his dad, Rome Barrett, like, I, you know, I grew up, Rome was a few years ahead of me, and we, you know, we work out together and train at Ryerson. And, you know, I saw when Rome came back from St. John's. And Rowan relied on his athleticism. Rowan was one of those super athletic dudes.
Yeah.
And he relied on his physicalness and his athleticism. And it wasn't until Rowan was hurt. He had I like to tell the story. Rowan had a stress fracture. And, you know, he took a year off from playing ball to heal. And, you know, that's where Ruan, that was the best thing that ever happened to him, because Ruan, you know, learned the game, learned to move without the ball, not to rely on his athleticism, but to think the game. And Ruan just became a great knockdown shooter. And I think he's passed that on to, now RJ doesn't have to go through that. RJ doesn't have to go through just relying on his athleticism, you know, because Ruan taught him the game, how to think the game. And so now, because his dad went through it, now RJ knows how to, you know, use his athleticism and not just rely only on it, but use it to get his shot off. Also, you know, to create separation. And then, you know, when your godfather is Steve Nash, one of the smartest basketball, you know, guys to play in the NBA, that also helps as well.
Right.
And so, yeah, he's going to be special, man. He's going to be special. And again, with anything, as long as he stays healthy, you know, he's going to be doing big things. He's just going to get better and better. He's improving on his shot. You know, he's improving his shooting. So
let me ask you a question, because I can hear the passion in your voice talking about RJ Barrett, this particular player, which is, by all accounts, for people who don't know, this is in his class, he's the number one player rated in the nation, in the world, basically, right now. And unless something happens, you're gonna be paying to see him play in a few years. But with that said, you've been coaching for a long time. I had the chance to get your tutelage while I was at Ryerson, many years back. So to me, you've been coaching close to 20 years now. Where does the passion lie in you when it comes to coaching at this stage?
Oh, for me, it's always been since I came back from school. It's that passing on what I've learned to players, and when they have that when their eyes get big and they have what I call the ha-ha moments or epiphanies. When they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Oh man, nobody ever showed me that. And you know, it's such a great feeling to know that you're helping somebody improve and get better. You know, get better playing. And it's, you know, that's where my passion always lies. Like if you look at my basketball, my career arc, I work backwards. Most people, they start coaching in high school, then they go to college, then they go to university. Mm-hmm. I started in university. I was there, and I was like, you know what? Some guys are lacking certain understanding of the game. So I went back. I went down to college, and then I'm back at high school. And, you know, I really enjoy coaching. I really enjoy teaching. I like teaching the game of basketball. You know, I like making guys aware of certain things that they weren't aware of before. And it's not the big things. It's the little things, right? It's the little things where you tell a guy, like, just do this. And they're like, oh, yeah, that makes so much sense. Or just do that. And they're like, yeah. You know, you point these little things out, and, you know, it just adds so much more to the game, right? It just changes the game completely, right? And, you know, for me, I was fortunate also to I played for a coach who, you know, before he became a head coach at St. Mary's, he was a scout in the NBA. And his personality is such that he was OCD, and he's a perfectionist. If you've ever been around OCD and perfectionists, their attention to detail, they're very detail-oriented. And that's what basketball is about. You have to be paying attention to the details, the little things. And so learning that from him, and then my mentor, Patrick Williams, who's also a perfectionist in OCD, so I learned so much more from him as far as even teaching the game more. So, you know, that's where the passion lies. I think it's always going to be there. I just like working with kids. I just like, you know, a kid can't shoot, because I was that kid that couldn't, you know, as much as people say that in high school I was a shooter, I didn't think I really was a shooter. I think I was a volume shooter. I just put up a lot of shots. I was a hog. You know, I was literally a hog. I just jack up shots until I learned how to be an efficient and effective scorer. And so I went through a lot of phases, like I see people going through. Like, I messed up, my elbows were out of my shot. I had a hitch on my shot. You know, I couldn't, you know, I put up 1,000 shots, I'll probably make like 75 to 100, which is horrible.
Right.
So going through all that, you know, and learning from that, now I'm able to say, you know, I can help a kid. I know how to get rid of a hitch on a shot. You know, I can say, this is what you need to focus on. Little things to help them with their shooting, but then even ball handling, even how to score, even just simple little things that could make you an effective and efficient scorer. Mm-hmm. These are that, you know, going through trial and error that I've learned, and also working with Patrick Williams, and also my teammates in college. what I find is players really develop with the guys that are around you. Like, I learned how to shoot on the move, like running guys off screen and getting open, because I had to guard a guy who was great at doing that. So in guarding him, you know, I had to figure out ways to stop him. So right. It made me a better defender, but it also, in turn, made me better at setting guys up, learning how to set up and use screens. Mm-hmm. So I got two folds out of it. So my teammates, having really good basketball teammates, will also make you a better basketball player. Because if you're with a guy that could, like, I remember going to prep school, I played with this guy named Iggy McRae, who had these wicked handles. And because I played with him, my handles got better. Mm-hmm. You know, my point guard in college would always pick my pocket. You know, and so, again, I had to learn, my handles had to become really tight. And I, you know, that's where I really learned how to dribble the ball really hard and staying low and changing directions really quick and changing in the middle. You know, if I'm doing a crossover, I got to change it really quick. So your teammates also help you. But understanding all this stuff, that's what I want to pass on to the next, you know, to whichever basketball player that wants to learn it. And that's where the passion is for me. It's just, I think I'll always have it. Like, I never get tired of just, you know, saying, giving a little pointer, this is what you can do to get your shot off. You know, this is what you should look for if you're coming off the screen. You know, watch what your defense is doing here. That's going to dictate what you do there. You know, this is what you do on a shot. You know, so, yeah, man, the passion, I don't think that passion is going to go away for a while. I love basketball. When I'm not on the basketball court, I'm thinking about basketball. I'm thinking about different plays to run, different ways to get guys shots, mm-hmm. see the way I see the game. So, yeah, man, I don't think I think I'm going to be doing this for a while. You know, Hubie Brown.
Yeah.
I want to be like Hubie Brown. Mm. Like, that guy, he's been coaching basketball for like 100 years. And he's still passionate about it, and he still loves teaching it and loves talking about it. So,
yeah, he's still 80 years old. He's still in his 80s, still doing broadcasts.
Yeah.
Still breaking it down.
I hope I could be like Hubie Brown, or I'm like Hubie Brown. I just have that love and passion for the game. And I just want to teach. I don't even call myself a basketball trainer. I'm like a basketball teacher. I like teaching the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, helping young men and women, you know, just getting better.
Yeah.
Passing on that, just helping them become basketball players as opposed to just people who play basketball. Because you become an expert at something, or what makes you an expert at something is the knowledge. You know, what separates you from being, somebody who cooks or somebody who's a chef is knowledge, right? That's what, right. You know, that's the difference between somebody who cooks and somebody who's a chef. It's like knowledge, man. If you have the knowledge, then, you know, that's what separates you from everybody else. So,
knowledge, love, and passion, I would say, because I think even for yourself, like, then that's a term I think I would use just with life. It's just, once you have something you love to do, it's not really a job anymore, right? Like, that's where you want to take it at that point, you know what I mean? So,
exactly.
All right, so here's my final question. How far do you see the next wave of talent coming from this city and Canada as a whole in the next 5 years? Now, I could be wrong, but, you know, I think the floodgates is basically just opened up, or it's opened up at this point, to the point that Toronto has now become one of the hotbeds for basketball talent in North America. And it's funny because I was talking to past contributor to South Shore Ave. I was talking to my brother Curtis, otherwise known to South Shore Ave as Big Brother Kurt. But but we were talking about that, saying, like, you remember back in the day when New York was like the hotbed for basketball? That was like the Mecca. And it's still called the Mecca, but, like, really, like, well, where's the great players from New York City? We don't see that anymore. We're talking about how, man, like, I think Toronto's at the point where it's like there's more players in the NBA in Toronto, I mean, from Toronto, than there is from New York at this point. Or if not, it's very close, which, you know, 20 years ago, we would have never thought that was even possible.
Never.
You know what I mean? Never. So where do you think the next wave is going at this point?
Dude, I'm glad you asked that. Like, the wave is ongoing. It's not going to stop. Like, I'm talking grade 5, grade 6, grade 7. It's just going to keep coming. Like, there's kids in grade 5 that are like 6'7", 6'8", and they can hoop. Man, there's so many kids that could play at all age levels. It's amazing. And the reason why it's also amazing is, you know, being on the AAU circuit, you see the different programs. And these top programs, they all have, at every level, have teams. Like, at a younger level, they have teams that could play.
Yeah.
Grade 7, grade 8. It's a crazy. And then, forget the top programs, then you have these the other programs that are on the peripheral that are doing their own things. Man, there's so much talent around. It's crazy. So, the wave, I'm so excited. I always knew. We always had the talent. You know what it is? We always had the talent.
We always had the talent. Always did.
You know, here's my thing, what I've always tell people. If you take hockey, we're the best country in the world for hockey. And so what everybody did was, which is common sense, you just send your players at a young age to develop in the best country or in the best place. Because at the end of the day, as a young player, you're growing not only physically, you're growing emotionally, and you're growing mentally. And then you're adapting to that the environment that you're in. And developing that mentality and what it takes to be successful. And so when we started sending our players to prep school in grade 10, grade 11, mm-hmm. now they're playing with future NBA stars, right?
Yeah.
And now they're playing with these guys going through because at this age, we're just as talented as they are, mm-hmm. right? It's just when you get to a certain point, that development for us stops here. But in the States, it keeps going because they're constantly around high level.
Yeah. Right?
They're constantly playing at a high level down there.
And they're getting reps at that high level.
Exactly. They're getting reps at that high level. Because when you play at a high level, you have to think the game a lot faster. You have to move a lot faster. You have to be more explosive. Right? And when you're thinking the game a lot faster, it just makes you better. And so when our guys are out there at prep school playing against future NBA stars, and the games are played above the rim, you're playing a game above the rim, you're also developing what I call the asshole factor. If you look at us in hockey, we're assholes. When we play against other countries, you know, we body check these guys in the boards. We're roughing them up. We're punching them in the face. We're mushing them with our gloves, right? We're assholes, right? And that's what, you know, that was Canadian hockey. That was our mentality, right? We're assholes. And it's the same thing with the States. When these guys step on the court, they're assholes, right? And the mentality in the States is you can't be nice. The minute you step on the court, the minute you cross that line, you have to be an asshole. This guy could be your brother. It could be your grandmother. If she's playing one-on-one against you, you better dunk on her. You better cross her, break her ankles, and dunk on her. Right? And so you have to be an asshole. And when you have that mentality going through all the way up, right, now you can play at that high level. Again, look at the States. You know, you look at other countries that play them. I remember Venezuela. You know, Venezuela, they play us. They start getting up in our guys' face, pushing our guys around. We lose to them in the Pan Am game. They try to do that to the same Venezuela team try to do that to the guys in the States. They just look at them like, come on, man. You're trying to bully a bully? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They just start laughing. You just got up into these guys. So you have to be an asshole. And I think you learn that when you start going to high school, when you start going to school down there at a young age, you learn to be an asshole. Because we, as Canadians, by our nature, we are nice. We apologize for everything. We're just nice. You know, we're not assholes. And down in the States, you learn to be an asshole at an early age. And that's what carries you. Because when you're an asshole on the court, you're going through people. Somebody's in your face, you're like, I'm going to dunk on you. You know, I'm going to break your ankles. I'm going to cross you over. It's not, you know, here we might do it once in a while. We start laughing. It's fun. It's cool. Great. Yeah, I cross you over, haha, I already did that to you. In the States, they'll cross you over and over and over again. They'll dunk on you over, they'll embarrass you, you know, they'll make you look bad over and over. We might do it once or twice to a guy and then like, okay, I'm good. You know, but down there, it's just constant. You know, and if you have weakness, they exploit that. You can't show that you're weak down there. You know, here, you show that you're weak, you're soft, everybody feels sorry for you, it's okay. You know, so once you get down to the States, it's just a different mentality down there. And I think that, you know, having our guys go down there, you know, it helps a lot. Especially, and it's not for everybody, but guys like RJ, you know, Andrew Nembhard, you know, Andrew Wiggins, Corey, like a really top elite guys, they need to be down there. Because when you're an elite guy, everybody's coming at you. And if you're not an asshole when everybody's coming at you, you know, they're going to bury you. So, you know, I think that also helps in our development, the fact that at an early age, guys are going down to the States. We're playing more on high-level preps AAU circuits. So the EYBL, Under Armour, Adidas, the Dauntlet, you know, you're playing on, you're getting to see, again, these high-level players, you get up against, you're going up against them, you see where you stack up, and you know what you really have to work out, you know, how hard you got to go in practice, you know, how hard you got to push yourself. So the wave is just there, man. And, you know, and then you also have exposure things like the Adidas Nations or, you know, Nike Hoop Summit, where now, you know, these NBA scouts and GMs are seeing you at a young age, and they're putting you on the map. And so now they're following you. So there's also more exposure in that sense, you know, for our top players, you know, to be seen. And that's big. When you're playing, you know, when you're playing in front of these GMs, it does so much for your confidence. And you know, as a player, confidence is huge. So
yeah.
When your confidence is now, you're confident. You're like, oh, you know, you have that swagger. I just played in front of Jerry West or, you know, whoever, Sam Presti or whatever. You know, your confidence is just high. You know, you just played against this guy. You just played against that guy. So it's like, okay, you come back home. You got a little bounce in your step. Or you had your prep school, you know, if you had a good prep school like Mount Verd or Oak Hill Academy, you know, St. Benedict's, you know, with these high-level players, you're just like, you know, you're constantly going at these going up against these high-level guys. It only makes you better, and then you bring it back home, and then you play for a national team. Yeah, man, the wave is ongoing. It's just a wave after wave after wave. I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
And you know what? And I think it's at a great place right now because, I mean, last year I got a chance to look at. I didn't get a chance to go, and I will go next year to the All Canadian game. I watched it on TV like that this year. I just, you know, and I was impressed, man. It was the first year that I sat back and I watched it, and I went like, holy shit! Like, there is a lot of talented kids out here right now, and it's not like this one decided to not play in the game and this and that. It's like some of the kids. It was a nice game to watch until, of course, TSN cut it. But that's a whole other story altogether. Yeah. But
I mean,
you had some kids from all over that can play it. I mean, there was that one kid from Montreal. I can't remember his first name. Lugans Dort, I think.
Dort.
Oh,
yeah,
my
he's
God.
Up at AI. He's in Orangeville right now.
Oh, yeah. He's a beast.
He's a beast.
Yeah. He's a beast. Yep. He's like 17. I'm like, you sure he's 17? Like, he was, he was a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm thinking, man, like, this kid's a senior, and he's got another year of high school left. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, yeah. This is for real now, you know, and like I said, I think it's in a great place. I agree with you. I think the wave is here, and I'm not sure if it's ever going to stop. Plus, on top of that, you look at your generation, even my generation, we had a lot of great players that came that played, but maybe didn't get a chance to necessarily, you know, make it to the NBA or go overseas, but have a whole lot of knowledge. And now that's being paid forward to this generation. And I think they're reaping the real benefits of it, you know, so I think that's where you know, it's just as important as that, too. I think the teachers, you know, like coaches like yourself and, you know, like so many others that me and you both know that are paying it forward to the next generation, you know, and it's paying dividends, man. Like, it's now you're seeing these kids and they're going to school, and it's not like, hey, we're going to like a small mid major. No, we're going to, you know, University of Pittsburgh, and we're going to tear it down. You know, like this is where it's at now. And it's great to see. It's about time. It's about time.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, you know, so that's like I said, Canadian basketball is here. It's just now we have to get that full support. But I think with the more players that are, you know, going to be walking into the NBA and doing damage, I think, you know, you can't deny it long enough. So basically what I'm trying to say is at the end of the day, we'll finally get to watch full highlights of basketball in a few years.
I know, right?
You know, and on that note, brother, listen, man, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Thank you coming on to the Av and, you know, sharing your thoughts, having this basketball talk, man, sharing your thoughts on the Canadian hoops, on coaching, you know, on Kyrie Irving, on all things NBA. You know, it was a pleasure having you on, brother.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
No doubt. And anything you want to push, like you want to push your team right now, I can't believe I'm letting you have the platform to push Oakwood Collegiate right now, but I will go ahead. I'll step aside for the next 30 seconds, you know, let us know what you guys do with that.
Well, yeah, you know, again, I'm back at Oakwood. We're, you know, trying to, as usual, Coach Miller, who I believe is one of the best coaches. He's top three high school coaches. He's very underrated. The job that he does with Oakwood, preparing these guys, not only on the basketball court, what I love about him is just for life. What he the way he deals with the players and how he cares about these players. So back at Oakwood, but what I really want to push is also I mentioned it earlier, you know, myself, Patrick Williams, and Kevin Messiah, you know, Rise, we call ourselves Rise Basketball Skill Refinement. And we're not basketball trainers, we're basketball teachers. We're not just going to roll out cones and have you dribble around it. We're going to actually teach you the game. And, you know, you won't see us on Facebook and Instagram. We let it be that to everybody else. We just, you know, I use the analogy. We're like that Kung Fu master that lives in the village that only kind of the villagers would know about. You know, we're not opening up schools everywhere. It's just, you have to know somebody to know us and just come and get, you know, like Bruce Lee's master, the Ip Man. Mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, he doesn't teach everybody, you know, but, you know, when you do teach, you know, people come out of there and, you know, they're better for it. And everything for us right now is word of mouth. But I mean, I think eventually we will get there where we'll be out there and on social media. But Basketball Unlimited Skill, BSR, Basketball Skill, Rise Unlimited BSR, Basketball Skill Refinement, myself, Patrick Williams, and Kevin Messiah. So, you know, we're, what I love about us is we're attention to detail. You know, we're detail oriented, and that's what is going to separate you from the next player. It's not, you know, anybody can just, you know, you can grab a cone and go around cones and that, but because everybody's doing that. But it's why you're doing it, and how is it going to, you know, why are you doing this move, and how, when do you do this move, and how to be effective and efficient. So, Rise Unlimited BSR. You know, check us out, Rise Unlimited website, myself, Patrick Williams, and Kevin Messiah.
All right, sir, no doubt. Once again, thank you for coming on, and, you know, we're glad to have you back the next time for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you've been too long, man. Let me know.
All right, no doubt.
I'm always here.
No doubt. All right. No doubt.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Before we end this podcast, I want to make a slight correction. Andre Drummond is actually shooting 63%, not 75%. You see, what had happened was, before we recorded this podcast, when I was doing my little research, he was shooting 75% from the line. But what happened was, while we were recording this podcast, they were playing against the Indiana Pacers, and he decided to go 0-for-7 from the line, therefore bringing his percentage down to 63.5%. Yeah, so at the end of the day, he ended up kind of destroying my credibility in the process. But, you know, I don't control how that man shoots at the free throw line, so you can't blame me for that. I feel like I was really right in the beginning. I'm still right. It's just that, you know, it just got updated in real time while we're recording, so that's not my fault. So anyways, thanks once again for tuning into the AF podcast. I am grateful, as always, for you listeners for lending me your ears. Special shout out goes out to O'Neal Kamaka for coming on the show to discuss all things basketball, and I hope you enjoyed it. Continued success to that man, even if he's coaching at Oakwood. Once again, you can catch South Shore Ave wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen to all podcasts from South Shore Ave on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And once again, make sure you subscribe to that. And as always, to subscribe to the foundation website, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For O'Neal Kamaka, this is Cal C. And you have just tuned in to the AV podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, folks. Peace. We out.